Hello and welcome to The Odd Past. I'm your host, history teacher, and author Matt Perry. I invite you to join us every week as we explore the weird, wacky, sometimes disgusting, but always strange and odd side of our collective pasts. Be sure to check out our sponsors, Flipboard.com and Anchor.fm. If you love The Odd Past, remember to leave 5-star reviews on any podcast platform you may use. And remember, history should never be boring. If you study history long enough, you're going to come across the idea that was prevalent through most of the 19th and the early 20th century, and that was the idea of the great man. It doesn't mean great in the sense of, you know, fantastic, super cool guy. It means a overpowering figure, whether it be man or woman, but an overpowering figure that can change the course of history, can change events, and leave lasting impacts on our world. And now, there's been a slight movement recently, over the last 5 decades or so, if you can call that recent, away from the great man theory. Historians and the historiography of the 20th century is very split on the great man theory. And I can see both sides. I can see where people think that simplifies things too much. What about all of the outside factors? What about the economic factors? You know, let's take Hitler for example. Hitler, according to the definition, was a great man in that sense. Again, it doesn't mean he was good. It means that he had that daunting personality. He had the charisma and he had the power. And he left an indelible mark not only on the 20th century, but also on the world. People that ascribe to the great man theory will say, look, one man had that much of an effect on the 20th century. But what about the people that see the outside sources, who give credence to it's a collection of factors that can change the world? Without the economic downturn of the Great Depression, without the Treaty of Versailles and the end of World War I, Hitler and the Nazis most likely never would have gone into power at all. So I find myself as holding a master's degree in history and teaching it for a decade now. I see myself very much on the fence. I hate to sound wishy-washy, but I can see both sides. It took a unique personality. It took a unique set of skills that Hitler possessed to fill that power vacuum in 1930s Germany. But I also see where the other side of the coin is correct as well. Without the economic problems, without the anger over the Treaty of Versailles, without the American and British and French want to completely stay isolated and the very big, large isolation movement, Hitler never would have got to the heights that he did. And so I talk about Hitler in this little preface to lead into maybe somebody that not everyone knows about, but if you subscribe to the great man theory, this guy quite possibly destroyed Soviet Russia, or not Soviet Russia, excuse me, destroyed the Russian monarchy and led to the rise of Soviet Russia. And that was a peasant that was born in the snowy drifts of Siberia and rose to have the ear of Tsar and Tsarinas. And that's Grigori Rasputin. Before we get started, through the story of Grigori Rasputin, I must first give two recommendations. And I do short podcasts for fun. And I always like to thank my listeners. I have more listeners than I ever dreamed I would have. And so your support means everything. Remember to check us out, theoddpast.com and patreon.com/theoddpast. But I do this for fun, and I try to keep it very short and very condensed. My two inspirations to even tell the Rasputin story are from two vastly different but fantastic podcasts. The guys with the last podcast on the left, you need to listen to these guys. They take history and they take historical figures and they tell the stories in their own unique ways, and it's so cool. So check them out. They have, I believe, a 3 or 4 part series on Rasputin. And also the master of all historical podcasts, Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. He tells the entire story of World War I, and it's still available for free on all podcast directories. It's called Blueprint for Armageddon. I believe Rasputin comes along somewhere in the 3rd or 4th episode. So obviously those guys have a much longer and much more detailed discussion. Listeners of this podcast know I like to keep it around 20 to 25 minutes. So I'm going to give you the cliff notes of Grigori Rasputin. So with that preface and with that disclaimer out, let's get started. Rasputin was born in Siberia. And Siberia is as bad as we think. It's cold, it's a desolate area, and it's a hard scrabble life. And Grigori grew up poor. And for roughly 400 years, Siberia was a part of the Russian dynasty under the Romanovs. The Romanovs were one of the longest-serving royal families in all of Europe and Asia. They served for around, as I said, 400 years, from the 1600s to the early 1900s. The lineage of the Tsars had many impressive leaders, and some forgettable ones, but everyone that has even done a basic study of World War I knows the last Tsar of Russia, and that was Nicholas II. Nicholas and his wife, Alexandria, were happily married, and they had 4 daughters. Now, that was a problem in a dynasty. The joke is you always want an heir and a spare. Well, the first 4 children of the Romanovs were all female, and there was a rule in the Russian monarchy that women could not rule ever since Catherine the Great. There was a lot of people bitter, even though Catherine the Great was pretty kick-ass. Men and women have always had this problem, and the men had a very big problem listening to a female czarina. And so Nicholas and Alexandria were very upset. And Alexandria begins to show, after the birth of her 4th daughter, she shows a willingness and an interest in kind of the occult. I don't want to say she was full on having like seances or anything, but she would definitely buy in, and she was an easy mark for people that said that they could help her have a son. And she would go to medicine men. She would have healers and medicine men come to the palace. And it was all very telling. Luckily for the royal family, their 5th child was a boy, Alexei. Now, as many people have pointed out, there is a long lineage in all royal families, for the most part, of birth defects. And that's because of the intermarrying and, cousins marrying cousins. And Alexei was born with hemophilia. And now hemophilia is where your blood cannot clot, or it struggles very much to clot. And I was listening to one of those podcasts that I mentioned earlier, and they brought up a good point that many people thought it would be like a cut that could kill you. And while that would be devastating, any bruise could lead to internal bleeding because your body does not respond the way that it should, and even just a basic bruise could turn into a death sentence. So Alexi shows the hemophilia at an early age, and the parents are devastated. Tsarina Alexandria was always looking for people to help with her son. And by the year 1906, she is introduced to a holy man from Siberia, and that was Rasputin. Rasputin was intimidating and weird and eclectic. People said that he shambled when he walked. He would mutter to himself. He had long, disheveled hair, unkempt beard, mustache. He stunk. He was a drunkard. Even though he was a holy man, he was a renowned man whore and drunkard. He would sleep with anything, and he would drink anything. But he also had what I mentioned in our introduction, that something special, that spark, that special something that made him unique and what we would call a great man. He could woo anybody. He was charming in his own way, and he could persuade people. And so when the Tsar and Tsarina meet with this eclectic, weird, holy man from Siberia, they are taken aback, but they like him. He's a renowned healer throughout the country, and he was in St. Petersburg to meet with some well-connected individuals. The Tsar and the Tsarina happen to mention, even though it's a very tightly held secret, hey, our son struggles with a disease. Would you be willing to look at him? It was absolutely unheard of for the Tsar and the Tsarina to mention their son's hemophilia, because if that became known, the throne of the Romanovs was in dire jeopardy. If usurpers could see that the one male heir could die at any day, all they had to do was get rid of Nicholas, and that would be the fall of the Romanovs. So they took a big chance telling Grigori Rasputin about the hemophilia, but they were desperate parents. They loved their kids. One of the striking things when I've read multiple biographies on Nicholas, he was a devout dad. He was not a good czar. He was not a good czar at all, but he was a fantastic father. And he and Alexandria's desire to heal their son by any means necessary is inspiring, and it's heart-wrenching. So they asked this holy man, can you help our son? And Rasputin says yes. And it's where it gets so strange, because this is where we don't know what to believe. Because there are multiple accounts with multiple witnesses that Grigori Rasputin truly did save Alexei's life on multiple occasions. One time, Alexei was on a boat trip in the royal yacht, and he fell, and he smashed his body up and was very bruised. Grigori was back in Siberia. Alexei was on his deathbed and was even given his last rites. Alexandria telegraphs Rasputin and says, please help my son. And from hundreds of miles away, Rasputin sends a telegraph that says, your boy will be fine, just make sure the doctors don't bother him too much. They kept the doctors at bay, and within days, Alexei was well. That's what makes this story so weird, and that's why it needs to be on the Odd Past. How did that happen? You know, there are so many theories out there. There are so many people trying to make sense of it. I'm no doctor, and I definitely don't know what type of spiritual powers Rasputin had. And I'm not making a stand either way. I just say it's really weird. What it wasn't a mystery, though, was that the power that Rasputin held over the royal family, They listened to everything he said. They would have falling outs at times because his drinking and whoring would become too much, but they always fell back into the Rasputin trap. As I said, he wasn't everything he claimed to be. He was devoted wholly, or to his religion, but, you know, he also loved to drink himself into a stupor. His actions around the city caused massive amounts of embarrassment for the royal couple. People would talk. People would even whisper, I bet the Tsarina is in love with Grigori Rasputin. There was talk of an affair. After the outbreak of World War I in 1914, the Tsar even turned to Rasputin for guidance, with Rasputin telling the Tsar to go to the front and take command. While the Tsar was gone, the Tsarina allowed Rasputin to make monumental decisions of national importance on her behalf, and this was the final straw for many in Russia. Soon, three prominent men decided that Rasputin had to go. Prince Felix Yapustov invited Rasputin over to his house for wine, food, and some women one night. The prince gave Rasputin cakes and wine laced with cyanide. Rasputin, entering the basement of the home, sat down at the dinner table and ate three cakes and drank three glasses of the cyanide-laced wine. The cyanide did nothing to Rasputin, and the prince and his two cohorts were freaking out. Eventually, the prince is at a loss. He has no idea what to do. This man must be a holy man, they're thinking. He must have some sort of power. And so the prince has Rasputin get up for make some excuse for Rasputin to stand up. He pulls out a gun and he shoots him square in the chest, and he runs out of the house, leaving Rasputin laying in the basement. Hours later, the three men return and walk down to the stairs to the basement. As the prince walked in, Rasputin jumps off the floor and attacks the prince, and he runs up the stairs and out the front door. He's screaming, "I'm going to tell the Tsarina! I'm going to tell the Tsarina!" Guys, this is crazy. This healer has had six servings of cyanide, a bullet to the chest, and he's still alive. He's kind of like a final boss on a really hard Nintendo game back in the day. Well, finally, the three killers chase down Rasputin, and they shoot him in the head, finally killing this priest who is in berserker mode. With Rasputin dead, they throw him in the river. And attention turned to the royal family and their failure to rule decisively and adequately during the First World War. Eventually, all of the distrust with the Tsar and the Tsarina led to the Bolshevik Revolution, and the entire royal family, even poor Alexei, were executed by the Bolsheviks. The fall of the last dynasty in Russia and the rise of the communist regime all began over the distrust of a crazy holy man and the family that he served. Guys, I want to thank you sincerely for listening to The Odd Past. So great to have listeners. If you need to email The Odd Past, you want to propose a topic, or you just want to say something about the show, it'd be mphisteach, hstteach@gmail.com. Check us out on theoddpast.com or patreon.com/theoddpast. And remember those good reviews. And until next time, remember that history should never be boring.